Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, February 19th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Good morning, Kelly.
Also with me today, my sidekick and TDO rabble-rousing, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Good afternoon.
And so today we have some interesting perspectives on some things. The first is Steven Spielberg came out and talked about how he is still a firm believer in the going out to the movies and seeing a film in a theater experience. Right, John?
Right. And he's concerned that the success of streaming movies, streaming television, and all the players involved in that is going to impact the live movie theater experience, which he thinks is special and worth preserving.
Well, I would disagree only because I think it's the success of the smartphone and making it possible for everybody to text through the entire movie with a giant lit up screen is the thing that is harming the experience. It's really not Netflix, at least in my estimation. So that's a thing. Now, do you agree with him on this, John?
No, I don't.
Okay, how come?
There's been a tension between movie theaters and television for a long time. They've been leapfrogging them each other for a while. Ever since color television came out, movie theaters started thinking about how that was going to threaten the theater business. And so each side has been amping up the technology, trying to make sure that each one survives for a long, long time. But in the end, you're watching an image on some sort of display device. And if your preference is being in a theater where people are texting and phoning and shining their flashlights and talking and kicking the back of your seat in 30 minutes of 120 decibel trailers before the show starts, you know, if that's your thing, you know, and then having to reserve a seat and get on your phone and, you know, you just can't walk into the theater anymore in general. You have to, you know, buy an advance ticket. And so, you know, I think it's just going to be sort of like music on your phone instead of, you know, a Marantz receiver and woofer speakers. You know, people are happy to listen to music on a phone.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's as good.
It isn't as good, but people are willing to settle for something that isn't as good for the convenience. And I feel like in 20 or 30 years, the movie theaters are going to be pretty much gone. Relics of the malls.
So I suspect you're right that the number of movie cinemas is going to decrease. I'm a funny case because I'm not a huge movie person. I'm a very big box set person. I'm a very big reader. I'm a very, very, very big fan of music and live music. I'd say, and also the theatre, but I'd say cinema is my main cultural failing. I don't particularly, I certainly don't watch movies at home. But I largely enjoy the experience of going to movie theatres, particularly we have them where I live in London, the kind of more boutique-y, have a cup, you know, have a drink at your seat, here's some snacks kind of movie theater.
Yes.
I think that's a very enjoyable experience. I enjoy the social experience of going to the cinema with my friends. I also enjoy the experience sometimes of just going by myself. And I've done that, and it's a really nice experience just to be there for a couple of hours by yourself and quiet in the dark enjoying a movie. So I think there is, well, I suspect John is going to be pretty right that the number of of cinemas is going to rapidly decrease. I think there's still something to be said for the experience.
I do too, if the experience is refined. Like, you know, one example I can think of is the Alamo Draft House, where they have particular types of things. Like, I know they did, like, they will do screenings with a Q&A at the end with somebody involved with the film, and you can get good snacks and, like, a reasonable beverage there. You know, if you're a beer snob, they've got you covered, that kind of thing. We have a similar chain of theaters here in Portland, where I live, and And, you know, it's nice to be able to have a nice experience out, you know, like if you want to have a meal, you can have a nice meal before the movie. Like a couple of the theaters here have a nice restaurant off to the side. You can get good snacks and a nice drink, like while you're at the movie, you're sitting in a comfortable seat. You know, there aren't a ton of seats in some of these theaters because they're those great big ones with the recliner seat, the recliner footrests on them. And it's a very comfortable experience and it's kind of nice. And, you know, if that's the experience that he's talking about, absolutely preserve that. That is one that makes me really happy. Having to sit next to somebody who's bored and unhappy about being there in the first place and, you know, spends the whole time scrolling on their phone, that's not a great experience. We've all, I think, at some point probably had to sit next to somebody to talk through the whole thing or, you know, like John mentioned, kick your seat. And and that part is the frustrating piece of the experience. I think what's going to happen is the places where it's the seat stampede, where there is no assigned seating and it's the old style fold up seat and all that kind of stuff. I think that's the thing that's going to go away a little bit. There's going to be a little bit more like the experience like Charlotte's talking about, like I'm talking about. I think those are probably going to stick around. And honestly, if Steven Spielberg were to be more clear about the experience he's trying to preserve, I don't think it's the one where there's kids behind you throwing popcorn and kicking your seat. And, you know, there's something to be said for getting to go to a movie. Like, this is still one of the few things that that's like live sports. Like, you have to do it at the time. You know, you can do it after in some fashion, but it's not going to be the same experience as I saw that movie opening night. You know, I saw Wonder Woman when it opened. I saw, you know, a Star Wars movie when, you know, the night it came out, and I know the big thing that happens in the middle. And, you know, like that is going to always, at least at this point, until Netflix can convince, or someplace like Netflix can convince studios to let me watch it in my house instead of having to go out to a cinema to do it. That's always going to be the case. It's always going to be, you know, if you want in on Captain Marvel opening weekend, if you want in on the new Avengers movie to find out what happened after the last Avengers movie, like, you have to go out to a theater in order to do that. And you're not going to be able to do it in your home, at least at this point, you know, on a reasonable time frame.
Yeah. Although obviously that gap is getting ever smaller.
Yes.
I've noticed that very much here in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Sky Television are getting movies very, very quickly now.
Yeah.
The other thing, which I think possibly picks up at what John was in talking about, is obviously there's the technological advance that makes, you know, we're not now talking about watching movies on little screens that are not high definition and not good quality.
Right.
So in the same way that you're not listening to you don't need to listen to Spotify on tinny phone speakers or crummy headphones, you know, for not huge amounts of money, you can have decent headphones that give you a good listening experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously the technology to let you have a good home viewing and home audio experience is getting ever cheaper as well. Like, you can watch for not very much money, you can have a decent sized TV that mm-hmm. shows movies nicely.
Yes.
And that's the most popular TV size now is 65 inches, I read.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
Right. And you know what's
quite telling?
And a massive advantage to the TV in your house is that there's a very slim chance of a 6 foot 5 inch person sitting directly in front of you for the entire film.
Oh, welcome to my world.
Welcome to mine. If they're 6 feet, like, yeah, I'm 5'10". Great. Now I can't see.
Kelly, I'm 5 foot.
No, I'm five. Yeah, I'm 5'4". Like, you don't have to be an NBA player to sit in front of me and screw up my view, which is one of the nice things about like the new seating is that, you know, they took out like the almost like half the rows of seats, and so like when it's that much higher than the row in front of you, it's a lot easier for me to see. It makes me happy. So I think like I think what the difference is here is that Steven Spielberg is complaining about a cinematic experience that doesn't measure up, and it depends on the yardstick that he's using. Because, no, I'm never going to sit down and watch a movie for the first time on my phone. That's never going to happen, no matter how big my phone gets. That's never going to be the thing I do. Like, my first preference is going to be a theater for the sound experience, for the screen experience, and honestly, for the social experience of it. I can go to a movie with way more people that I know than I can invite over to sit in my basement and watch my movie with me, because my basement doesn't hold near as many people as a row of theater seats. So it's a lot easier if I want to go with a bunch of people at once.
That's an interesting technology issue you brought up, Kelly. In my experience, and I've written about this a lot, people are interested in the visual part of their home theater. They'll buy a 65-inch LCD TV, and then they'll buy a soundbar, or worse, they'll let the sound come out of the TV speakers.
Right.
And this technology of having a central amplifier and a Bose 5.1 system and laying out your speakers is hard technically, and it's hard spatially, because not a lot of homes are built to be able to wire your speakers up like that in a surround sound experience. Right. And so people go into the movie theater and they're blown away by the speakers that are hanging on the side of the walls and above them in the movie theater. So that's something the movie theaters still have in their favor.
Right.
But I've been in stereo shops, specialty stores in Denver, like Cherry Creek Audio, where they have a special room. And boy, do they have a home theater set up, and they've got a sofa, salesman says, come over here and sit here. I'm going to show you something. Mm-hmm. And you're blown away and you say, wow, this is how a home theater can be. But it's a project.
Well, and that's exorbitant. And, you know, it's very easy to put a not very expensive surround sound system in your house if you have the logistical capacity for it. Like, it's really not hard to get surround. There's stuff that goes into it, you know,
are the solution in the vendor's minds, because they're thinking, well, if we just get them to buy a soundbar, their problems are over. But it's not quite all there.
I feel like that's a 50% solution. If all you're doing is watching TV and you want to be able to hear the TV better, then a soundbar is for you. If you want to sit down, if you want to go make popcorn and dim the lights and sit down and watch a movie, capital W, capital A, capital M, watch a movie, then you need at least good speakers, if not surround sound, maybe subwoofer. That makes a difference, you know. And
it's probably 1-2% of the homes in the United States have that.
Oh, I would say it's more than that, but it's not a vast number, but I would say it's higher than a percent. There's at least 2% to rub together there, I think, John.
I really agree with you both that the biggest difference is the audio, because we know how good quality home TVs are now.
Yeah,
but it's, as John is saying, a 65-inch kind of, you know, in the 40s kind of range as well. These are good quality 4K, and we will obviously get 8K images, and your eye can't really. Is going to get to a point where it can't process much better anyway.
Right.
So we're kind of there, or we're doing pretty well on visuals.
Yeah. Even Charlotte and I can see it from here, and we're not even standing on tiptoe.
That's what I'm saying. But the cinema audio experience is a very different one.
Yes, absolutely.
It can be irritating. I know I've been in movie theaters where the trailer movies were so cranked up on the audio, crashing sounds, you know, superhero movies in the trailers are so loud, I've had to actually put my fingers in my ears to avoid the pain.
Yeah. And
oh, I love it when John gets cranky.
Well,
get off my lawn.
Get your iPhone movie off his lawn. I think part of it is that, you know, like, I get that Steven Spielberg is worried about somebody watching E.T. on their phone. Like, I get that. I mean, remember how long it took E.T. to come out on a disc? I mean, anyone? Am I the only one who remembers, like, waiting hundreds of years for E.T. to finally be released? And you know, yeah, if that's what he's worried about. I mean, I'm not saying I never watch movies on my phone, but you know what I watch on my phone? It's mostly that I'm listening to it again. Like, I never watch a movie on my phone. I watch a movie again on my phone. Something I've already seen, I might put it on my phone. Generally, if I'm going to watch something, like, and I'm going to be portable, then I will do that on my iPad. But mostly that's television. It's not movies. That being said, I have watched who am I kidding? I've watched a minimum of 3 Star Wars movies on every screen I own. And that goes all the way back to the iPod 5th generation that came with video. Because I can. And it's not because I think that that's anything resembling a out-to-the-theater experience. I just really love those movies. And so those are what I watch. And it doesn't get any more complicated than that.
My wife has a cold and she's not feeling well, she'll curl up in the recliner and she'll watch Star Wars on her iPad.
Yep. That's my go-to. Like, yeah, that's my Mr. Rogers sweater of movies is The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. 4, 5, 6.
Oh, yes.
Back to back.
Yep. Oh, yes. I've done that a number of times on the regular. anyway, so, like, I feel like on the one hand, Steven Spielberg has a valid point, but I feel like on the other hand, there are a number of factors that I don't think he's necessarily considering. And if, you know, and yeah, I think there's more to that story, and I would love to have him on the show to talk about it further. John, maybe you can get him to come on Background Mode and talk to you about this.
I can try.
I cannot wait to hear that episode. I believe in you, John. In the meantime, I would like to talk to you about our sponsors today. Our first sponsor is Capterra. If you're still doing things the old-fashioned way, I hate to be the one to break it to you, but we've settled well into a new year, and you should start it off by replacing that tool that you use all the time that causes you the most angst. You can find replacement software with Capterra, the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution. Capterra has over 700,000 reviews of software from actual users, and you can find whatever it is you're looking for because there's more than 700 categories to choose from so that you're making an informed decision. And this is everything from big categories like supply chain management to something slightly more specific like legal billing software. So no matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution and fast. So here's what you do. Go to capterra.com/TDO for free today, and you can find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. That's CAPTERRA.com/TDO. Our new sponsor is a company called Edgewise. You know that thing where you're on the very edge of Wi-Fi, but your phone is still hanging onto the Wi-Fi. So instead of having a good cell connection, you end up having sort of a crappy Wi-Fi connection and you're not actually able to get anywhere. And you end up having to like go into the control center, fool with your antennas and make sure everything's working properly just so that you can do something basic on your phone. That's where Edgewise Connect comes in. So Edgewise Connect will swoop in and seamlessly switch you between Wi-Fi and cellular and even between Wi-Fi networks. And it will help prevent those slow spots or the non-working entirely spots from interrupting online activity. So if you're on a voice call, if you're streaming video, even though Steven Spielberg told you not to, then even if you're using navigation in your car as you're switching between those networks, Edgewise Connect will help you make that easier. So this fixes those connections and protects your online privacy. And the best thing about this is that the folks at Edgewise aren't just rescuing your internet connection. They also rescue owls from the edge of extinction because they donate 3% of their revenue to organizations dedicated to preservation. So go protect yourself. Go protect some owls, and you can find out more from them at edgewise.app. That's EDGEWISE.APP. Now, our other topic today has to do with the opposite of theaters and a little bit. And that is Apple and their streaming. Currently, we're talking about their TV service, but this does sort of spread out across all of the streaming that Apple offers, because Apple has been making when you take them in aggregate, Apple has made a bunch of changes lately to sort of shift things to look toward the future.
Yeah, they certainly have. And it's a lot of executive changes. The Wall Street Journal did a very nice write-up, which we've got links to over on TMO.
Mm-hmm.
Explain, you know, the obvious ones that we spoke about. And Aaron Hunt being replaced by Deirdre O'Brien. I wrote yesterday about executive hires leading in the home area. We've seen sit hires involved in AI and Siri. You can start to connect the dots here a bit, I think.
Okay, and what's the picture that is drawn when you connect those dots?
Well, I think it's what we've discussed before, that this is a company that is shifting focus from widgets, namely the iPhone, to services. And whether that is some of these services will relate to the kit. So improving Apple's home offering in general is obviously going to also involve building the HomePod and equivalent products.
Sure.
Right. Improving the retail experience is still going to involve selling Macs, iPhones, watches, whatever. But, you know, we know that Apple is building stuff or media services. We know this is happening. We're probably going to hear about it in just over a month's time on March 25th.
Mm-hmm. Because there's a rumor of an Apple event happening at that point. We have to continue to call it rumored because no one's received an invitation yet. But each of these things individually was something that generally people noted at the time. Oh, this person's doing this now. Oh, that person has this other title. That person left. And, you know, each of them individually didn't seem very impactful at the time. But the way the Wall Street Journal put all of them together was the part that was very interesting to me as an observer. Like, when you put it that way.
Right. It was really interesting. And you can see a profound shift actually being enacted by Tim Cook and the top team at Apple. It's not just us going, oh, Apple is changing to services. Isn't that interesting? Which it is. Mm-hmm. And it matters because, like, this is a big company and it's making a profound shift. But Tim Cook is actually clearly now putting the executive team in place that is making that shift happen.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think is interesting, and this touches a little bit on something we discussed yesterday when we were talking about AR and the future of Apple and the kind of stuff that they were doing.
Absolutely.
And talking about how there was a point where, Steve Jobs had talked about the post-PC era and how, you know, it seems like, at this point anyway, Apple is gearing up for the post-iPhone era. And when you think about how long Apple made computers before declaring post-PC and how long Apple made phones before at least making the moves to be post-iPhone, even if they're not officially saying that yet, those amounts of time are breathtakingly different.
Right.
So
let's be clear. Apple is never going to stop making iPhones
for a long time.
It's probably not going to stop making Macs and iPads and all the other things that we use and like.
Right. But it's going to be
plus the services revenue is only about $10 billion a year, which is
at the moment.
Oh, is that all? How will they ever survive?
At the moment.
Right. But it's interesting to see how these other devices, you know, like the watch and the AirPods and those things, you know, that was part of what we kind of conjectured about yesterday was the, you know, when the watch is more powerful and becomes the main device and the AirPods become some sort of accessory device to it, the way the iPhone and the watch have a relationship now. And talking about where the iPad fits for a lot of people and how there's a fair number of people whose, you know, computer upgrades turned out not to be another computer that you think of in the form of a keyboard and a mouse and a monitor and a processor, but more it's an iPad, you know, or I just do everything on my phone. You know, I bought a great big phone and now I do everything on my phone now. That's the thing to me that's sort of interesting is watching Apple shift to make these other things a bigger piece of what they do. And I think it's been really interesting to see how fast that evolution came as opposed to prior. How about you, John?
Well, in the process of thinking about the evolution of the services, I even though it's a modest fraction of Apple's revenue, I always worry about Apple's attention and ability to keep the plates spinning.
Yes.
On all the other secondary markets, like the Macintosh, for example. So it's close to my heart. So
no, I'm just thinking Apple's about Macintosh being a secondary market to Apple, which is very, is exactly the thing that I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Apple, as we know, Apple tends to focus on the money part of it. And when the services mm-hmm. revenue is vastly greater than the Macintosh market, you can expect mm-hmm. Apple's focus to be exactly where the money is. But mm-hmm. there are other considerations that we in the industry continue to worry about and pay attention to. And that is, even though the Macintosh may be not pulling in as much money as the iPhone and services, perhaps, mm-hmm. it's still one of the legs of Steve Jobs' tripod. Mm-hmm. And we still do our development on it, and we still do our engineering and science and architecture on it. Mm-hmm. So that's in the back of my mind throughout this discussion is how I wrote about that on Friday, Apple balancing walking services and chewing gum hardware at the same time. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to see how that pans out and how the reorganization of Apple, whether it puts even more emphasis on areas that are moving away from tradition, or whether it does a better job of balancing the company as a whole across the board. And mm-hmm. what I'm thinking of is the, you know, Apple's suspension of selling home routers and Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Which nobody really thought was a great idea. I haven't read a single article where somebody said, "Oh, this is just brilliant by Apple. It's inspired genius to drop the home routers and security and privacy."
Because it wasn't necessarily, first of all, it wasn't a genius decision because they made it at least 2 years later than they needed to. Yeah. So, you know, let's talk about dragging a horse, you know, to water. And
does the reorganization result in even more money, more financial security into the future as the iPhone perhaps fades a little? And does it balance out Apple's product line in a pleasing way, or will the result be a undue emphasis on exotics that most people are not really excited about yet, but are part of the future, like AR and home automation and autonomous vehicles?
First of all, there's a lot going on there. Wow. What are we calling exotics?
Things that are Apple's future and where there's a lot of money to be made, but isn't not yet mainstream, and perhaps people are feeling left behind.
Isn't it the role of an innovative company to make those things mainstream?
Yes, it is. Like, they've done a successful job of making home automation mainstream, right?
We'll talk to John after the show about the values of successful and mainstream, just to make sure we get those parameters adjusted properly. I think there's more to this, and part of that, to be completely honest, is, John, I think the Apple executive team is just waiting for you to write this up in particle debris so that they know what their next direction needs to be. So, but part of, like, I think the thing that you come back to a lot is a thing that I think about a lot too, and that's the balance. And, you know, having spent so many resources on iPhone for so long and then sort of taking their heads out of their phones collectively and going, hey, wait, like, maybe there's something else we should be doing. And, you know, making sure that you sort of classified the Mac as a secondary device, and that seems like an accurate statement, but that doesn't make it not important, and that doesn't make it not useful to loads of people. And, you know, and it's still a thing that deserves resources and attention and upgrades and progress and evolution, you know, just like the phone.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Beautiful. Ooh.
John is giving you a stunning.
I am so glad I'm recording this. Okay.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's going to be my ringtone for John later. Is couldn't have said it better myself. It's a thing that I think is really important, and I feel like that's that occasionally we've seen a few wobbling plates. You know what I mean? You know, John, when you're talking about business, you know, the business and the focus of the business, and that's and I feel like those plates have wobbled in the past. Mac Mini, Airport Express.
Because if you make a list of the hardware that Apple's were eagerly waiting for from Apple, it's AirPod 2, new iMacs with Coffee Lake, or maybe even something newer this summer, the 2019 Mac Pro, possibly an iPad Mini 5 to replace the aging 4. A new low-cost 10-inch iPad, possibly a new iPad Touch, according to Zach Hall, and an update to the MacBook, which is aging and lingering and kind of disjoint from the Air and the Pro.
Right, but here's the thing, is if they get those plates spinning back up again, can they keep them there? Because, we got a new Mini, but how long did that plate wobble? You know, if we get a new laptop, like, that plate's been wobbling a while now. And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I want there to be, and this is, again, one of those things, you know, where people talk about like being haters or whatever. And like, you know, there wouldn't be criticism if people didn't want Apple to be better. Like, you know, everybody who's complaining right now about why Apple doesn't have a new laptop is because that person is ready to go spend a non-zero amount of money on a new laptop and really wants to go buy it.
I'm literally waiting to give Apple my money.
Right? It's that picture that goes around, you know, of Fry from Futurama, shut up and take my money. And that's every time you hear somebody complain about there's no new iMac or there's no new Mac Pro or there's no new iPad Mini or there's no new MacBook Pro, what you're hearing is people saying, I have a 4-digit or 5-digit, if you're looking at a Mac Pro in some cases, amount of money that I want to hand to this company in Cupertino, and I want them to let me do it. So I'm really hopeful that those plates will stop wobbling, because, you know, if we get one round of evolution on everything, like, that's fine, but I want to see how long it takes for the second round of that to come once all of these rejiggers have come to pass. And once all of these adjustments have been made, now, if we get everything firing on all cylinders, are we going to start getting those updates a little more regularly again?
And we'll be watching.
We will. And I guarantee you that John will be here John will be here to talk to me about it. And hopefully Charlotte will be here to join us too on other sorts of issues. And with that, I'm going to call it for today. But Charlotte, thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
And John, thank you so much for coming by. And
thanks for having me as well.
Talking to us about theaters. I can't wait to get to go to the movies with you sometime.
I think that'd be fun.
It would be fun. And we will disagree about the movie the whole way home. I guarantee that too. I've been your host, Kelly Gaumont, and this has been the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.